No one very specifically asked for using the microphone.
Is this better? Okay. So I'm honored to talk in this very critical just after lunch lecture. I hope I can keep you awake. It's very difficult, I know, from my own experience. Anyways, I will talk about the Jiangsu algebra. And it is revisited. It has been visited many times before. And this is joined with the chairman of this afternoon section. I'm sure he'll allow me to go slightly over time, but I'll try not to. So let me just begin with a mission, kind of bad style, but let me do it nonetheless. If we have natural numbers P and Q, then we look at the algebra VP, Q, also denoted IP, Q, which is a dimension drop algebra consisting of continuous functions from the interval into NP tensor NQ, such that at the left endpoint it belongs to NP tensor 1, and at the right endpoint it belongs to 1 tensor NQ. And this algebra we have seen many times, also okay if P, Q are not natural numbers but supernatural numbers. I probably call those Tn supernaturals. In this case, this would be a UHF algebra. And the talk is about the Jiangsu algebra, and let me just write down the theorem of Jiang and Su, published in American Journal of Math in 1999. It says the following: if we let C be the class of inductive limits of direct sums of these algebras just mentioned here. Actually, it is a slightly larger class, but let me just restrict to this kind of building blocks. Then they say that there exists precisely one C star algebra V in this class, such that its Elliott invariant is the same as the Elliott invariant for the complex numbers. And maybe I should say that C is not the complex numbers, and also in parentheses C is unital and simple. The latter could be in theory detected from the Elliott invariant. And they also prove in that paper, they prove various things. For example, that Z is isomorphic to Z tensor C, and it is also isomorphic to the infinite tensor product of Z by itself. They show that whenever you have a unital endomorphism of Z, then it is true that this one is approximately unitarily equivalent to the identity of Z. So by this I mean unital endomorphisms. And thirdly, they show that Z tensor B is isomorphic to B for a whole lot of algebras. And let me just here mention for all UHF algebras B. But they prove it for even more than this. Let me just stick with this in here. And this algebra, I certainly can say, has received a lot of attention. I think much more than they might could have possibly expected. And part of that is due to the following, what we might call a meta-theorem, saying that if A is separable and nuclear, then A is specifiable in a certain meaning of that word, if and only if A can thoroughly absorb the damsel as a bottom mean. I say this is a meta theorem. It's not absolutely clear what we mean by classifiable. This is a pretty clear statement. And to the extent that, and it's not, it hasn't improved yet in this generality, whichever way you interpret it, but as we have seen during this conference, there have been many theorems along this line. Maybe particularly our chairman has proved a very remarkable theorem to the effect of this meta theorem here. So one of the problems already raised in Jan and Sue's paper is characterize those A of which A absorbs tensorially the Jiang Su algebra. In other words, characterize the classifiable C algebra if we also assume separability and nuclearity. Maybe even we have to assume more here, simplicity perhaps. Another problem would be simply characterize Z itself. I mean, of course, it is characterized in that theorem, but in a slightly indirect and not completely satisfactory way, given how important the sheet algebra is, if you like to have more slick, nice definitions of it or representations of it. To this end, there is a very nice theorem proved very recently by Dadlard and Thoms. And for this one, we need a class C, and I will just, and I'll write it down, I'll just say this consists of a universal field algebra that admits a universal embedding of a subhomogeneous algebra that has no abelian quotient. I will actually address that particular condition a little bit later. It sounds very innocent, and well, let's discuss it. It's certainly a very, very large class of algebras. It's very hard to find algebras that don't belong here, say simple ones that don't belong here. Okay, so then they say the following. Let me just get it straight. Suppose that D belongs to Z, and it is also included that these are universal algebras. Then D is isomorphic to the Jiang Su algebra, if and only if the following two conditions hold. One is that D is isomorphic to its infinite tensor product by itself, and secondly, D should act as a unit for any infinite tensor product, like this one here, for every A in this class C. So this is a very nice characterization of the Jiang Su algebra. And this talk, Wilhelm and I will present another characterization of a somehow different flavor. Let me mention one very central problem. The embedding problem, suppose A is a universal field algebra. And suppose that A has no finite dimensional quotient. Is that the same as saying that there is a unital embedding or map, that is an embedding, from V into A? Whenever I write things like this, I mean a unital staromorphism. And I mean, one indication is clear, I mean, going from here to here, and the other one is, I think a very deep problem. I'm going to ask problems which are way more specialized than this one. Whose answer probably is no. So I think all the more this actually is probably also no. But we don't know the answer. However, with one small answer we have, it is yes if the real length of A is zero. So somehow even zero algebras behave very nicely in this regard of embedding questions. And this is due to Elliot and myself, based on the work of Francesco Herrera and myself. And one reason for asking this embedding problem other than just asking it is that this will give us, I mean, if it were true, let me mark this with a star, and let me mark this, let's see, Whereas this one here with a double star has more of a mark. If this one holds, then C is the only unital C star algebra for which star and double star hold. And this is somehow an easy intertwining argument, because if you had two algebras for which that hold, that held, then you could map one into the other and the other into the first. And then you have this condition here, that using an approximate intertwining argument will mean that the two algebras are isomorphic. And even it is possible that you could even ask this relatively to a smaller class of algebras, and then you could still have a similar classification. Right. The next property we are going to talk about is this is definition by Andrew Thompson and Winter. We say that A is strongly self-absorbing. And let me call that SSA for short. If there exists an isomorphism that goes from A into A tensor A isomorphism, such that phi is approximately equivalent to the identity on A tensor 1. So by this map here, I just mean the map from here to here that sends little a into little a tensor 1. And C is strongly self-absorbing. Not only that, we can look for a map of known strongly self-absorbing C star algebras. That map looks as follows. So I mean the complex numbers and zero are excluded. So we have V, and then we have O infinity. So we have all UHF of infinite type, and we have O infinity tensor UHF again infinite type, and then we have O2. I mean, these are points and these are big clouds of algebras. And by this I mean that A tensor B is isomorphic to B. This is by definition, and that is a theorem of Thompson-Winter says that this happens if A embeds unitary into B, and the latter requires that A B is strongly self-absorbing. So we have V is a subalgebra of O infinity of this one here and this one here of O2 and so forth. We don't know if there are other ones. I mean, this is one of the big puzzling questions about strongly self-absorbing C-algebras. Is this a complete list or not? And for this end, we could ask the following question. A specific one: is V the only stately, finite, strongly self-absorbing C-star algebra, say such that its K0 group is set? So at least addressing this part of the diagram is this unique here, or do we have millions of algebras that could fit here? And we don't know the answer to that question. It will not be answered this lecture either, but we will somehow, with some restrictions, we will confirm this. But with restrictions. Well, let me now slowly address some of the results that we have. And for this one, we need a theorem due to Hirschberg, myself and Winter, saying that if A is a C of X algebra, and the dimension of X is finite, and D is strongly self-absorbing, then A absorbs D, if and only if it does so fiber-wise. And we have examples showing that if you skip this condition, then it's false. Which one?
The one
over there. Yeah, the same
pattern
to A. Because
then you
would
get the central
sample of the different.
No,
just in
pattern?
Yeah, because it's an independent
problem.
So
you get the central
sequence of the pattern. And to forward the little guys? Okay, that sounds okay. What do you say about that? Yeah, okay, I see what you mean.
If there's a main group, you fail, then you have a. That's
interesting. I feel a little bit shaky about it, but it's interesting. But maybe you can dress up your own talk later on. What? It was needed here, I guess, probably it could be right there. Yeah, that's right. That in many of these theorems about informing the sense of problem analysis, K1 intuitivity has to be assumed. Okay, and this leads us to the following corollary.
So what is K1-injective?
K1-injective, I mean, if you went to Bruce's talk, you would know all about it. Is that an answer? Suppose we have a strongly self-absorbing C-tile debug such that D tends to B is isomorphic to B for all UHF algebras B. Then D absorbs this algebra, the dimension of algebra I wrote down before, when P and Q are infinite supernatural numbers. Okay, infinite may be superfluous, but let me just underline it. I don't mean natural numbers here, I mean infinite supernatural numbers. And the proof is easy because this algebra here is a C of 0, 1 algebra. It is a C of X algebra with X being the interval, which is finite dimensional, and the fibers are UHF algebras. And with UHF algebra, it will depend on where we are. At the left endpoint, it is MP, right endpoint MQ, and in between, it is MP tensor MQ. So hence, each fiber absorbs D by hypothesis, and hence the whole algebra absorbs D. And
so you don't need K1 entry?
Probably not. I didn't ask for it either. So good. Let's give the following corollary. The one thing that C absorbs this algebra here absorbs the Jan 2 algebra because Z is an algebra with this property as noted already. And secondly, we can put this algebra unitarily into C and again Z back unitarily into set PQ. So this one here is clear, and as for this one, well, we can certainly put Z unitarily into this one here and hence into this one. So this follows by 1. And this basically follows by Jiang and Su's own paper. I made a specific remark about that in a paper by myself, but it's really just following ideas from Jiang and Su's paper. So we have, in other words, these families in between these two algebras here. And right, and this requires, I should say, P and Q are supernatural numbers, infinite, and they should be relatively prime. Relative primeness was not needed here, but it's certainly needed for this embedding. And what can we use this for? Well, let us make a definition and say that if I have some C algebra D, and suppose I have phi, which is a unital endomorphism of D, then we call phi trace collapsing. That should be a good descriptive word, almost don't need to define it, I guess. If for every pair of traces on D, one has that tau composed with phi is the same thing as tau prime composed with phi. And if there are no traces around, I mean, the algebras we're going to consider this for have traces. If there were no traces, every endomorphism would have this property. Right, and this then leads to the following, let us call it a proposition. So, again, P and Q are infinite supernatural numbers, and they are relatively prime. Then the first statement says that there exists phi, a unital endomorphism, on this algebra Vp, Q, such that phi is trace collapsing. That's the one first part. The second part says that for every such phi, which is trace collapsing, not just a particular one, but for each of them, well, then we can consider the stationary inductive limit. And we can take the inductive limit of that limit, just write it slightly by slightly like this, and this is then isomorphic to the Jampa-Zhu algebra. And as for the proof, it really just follows from what we observed already, because we know already we can do like this with unital endomorphism, so we then just take phi to be this map here. It factors through a C algebra that has a unique trace. And for the second part, well, actually, if you pick this particular phi, it would be kind of easy, it would just be an intertwining argument. But it is true for all phis. The way to prove that is basically also using Jiang and Su's paper, and using that if phi is of this particular nature, then the inductive limit satisfies the hypothesis here. Necessarily, one can check that. So this gives us one characterization of the Jiang-Zhu algebra, and we can right away make another small observation. Suppose that D is strongly self-absorbing, then it follows, again P and Q, supernatural numbers that are relatively prime. Then it follows that D is isomorphic to C, if and only if D has this sandwiching property. With unital mappings. So this is the only strongly self-absorbing C algebra to that sandwiching property. And why that is true, you can basically use an intertwining argument for this one here. And look at the stationary inductive limit where you have this map here. And that will give you Z. And then you can look at another one where you go from D back to D using this map here. And since D is strongly self-absorbing, basically one activity will be needed here also. That stationary inductive limit will be isomorphic to D, and hence D and C are isomorphic. Okay. So that was one part of my talk. The next part, we will give another description of the Jiangsu algebra. And the first question we're going to address is the following. For which unital A do we have that V n comma n plus 1 maps unitary into A? And this is actually quite related to somehow the definition here. It's certainly not unrelated to it, it's certainly related to it. And so this question we're going to try to attack and at least give an if condition for it, which at least will shed some light on it, but not. Is that the. Yeah, I mean, yeah, right. Yeah, so you have n is a fixed natural number. Not necessarily, just a unital star homomorphism. I don't care about embedding. I might care about embedding, but not today. In order to answer this question, we're going to look at, we're going to answer it in terms of the Kohn's semigroup. So let me just try to follow my manuscript. Well, if I could, then it wouldn't be a workshop, would it? I mean, anyway, it was already done. So remember that, as also from Andrew Trump's talk, that a Kohn group associated with C's algebra A is obtained by taking positive elements in all matrix algebras over A and modding out by an equivalence relation given by A equivalent to B if and only if they are Kohn's comparable both ways. And this Kohn's semigroup is an ordered abelian group, so it has a plus coming from direct sum, and the ordering comes from this ordering here. Right. And so we have one, let me call it proposition. So we need some facts about this one here, saying that if A is unital, and if the stable rank of we don't only need the stable rank of A is 1, and this is a cancellation result, then for every pair of elements in the Kohn's semigroup, for every positive element in a matrix algebra over A, and for every positive epsilon, we have the following: that if x plus, and now I look at the class represented by c, so this is an element in the Kohn's semigroup, the one represented by the positive element c, if this is less than y plus, and then we take the epsilon cut down of c, so we give a little bit away. So maybe it's stricter than just having the same element on both sides. If this happens, then we can conclude that x less than y. And let me say that stable rank 1 is definitely needed for this statement. I mean, this extends to the statement that the corresponding semigroup from projections has cancellation. And for that one, you could definitely leave, maybe I'll list this one. right, and the statement would have been false, as I said, if you didn't have the epsilon here. And this extends a result by George Elia. Maybe then later on you have even extended this one.
I think it's interesting if you want to find out if you're using something involving compact
elements. That's true, yeah.
Which, and that's what my statement also involves compact elements.
Yeah.
And you can vote, and then you can, well, and then you can.
It is still, yeah. And for me, it's not like a very difficult proof, but it is somehow has a surprising thing that you go using a prediction, and you have predictions around because you can just add a unit, and then you have that one, and then you use that somehow as an intermediate step to get this result. Well, with that at hand, we can then prove the following theorem. Here is units of the stable rank of AS1. Then the following conditions are equivalent. The first one says that, and I also have a natural number n, sorry. First one says that there exists an element x in the constantly group from A, such that n times x less than class of the unit, less than n plus 1 times x. So the unit, class of the unit, can be approximately divided by n. This next statement says that this is somehow translating this into an exact statement about positive elements, that you can find positive contractions which are pairwise orthogonal and pairwise equivalent, such that if you take 1 minus their sum, then this is less than, say, AS1. So this is how translating this statement, to a statement about positive elements. And the third one says that you can embed the dimension drop algebra V, n comma n plus 1, unitarily, or map unitarily into a unital star morphism. So these are equivalent, and let me say, the hardest part is definitely going from 2 to 3. I mean, that is many pages of calculation. Basically, what you do here is that you realize that you have this algebra here is given by generators and relations. And somehow using these positive elements and a lot of fiddling around, you can then recreate the generators from this algebra here. It is done using some tricks by Wilhelm, many tricks from Wilhelm, I would say, using completely positive maps of order 0. The implication of 1 to 2, this is where we need the result about, and let me just make a small remark about that. this one here, the first relation, gives us actually the positive elements, contractions, pairwise orthogonal, and equivalent, but not this one here. So from this thing here, you pretty easily get these elements here. So all you need now is to prove that this holds. And for that one, you want to choose this equation. So for that one, we want. And somehow this element here can be represented or thought of as being slightly wrong, but it's not completely wrong. It can be thought of as being this element here, this one, slightly manipulating. And we want that to be less than this thing here with this x. So in a manner of speaking, we want to have this. And we have the same thing if you add nx to it. And here you can see how cancellation will come in very handy. But there is a little bit more fiddling involved in it because I've cheated slightly. Okay. This also gives rise to many questions, which I think is good. We don't know everything. I can understand. I mean, it's a nice film. Why not make it be?
I'm just wondering. I thought that the weight work on the quite well was similar to the say with a certain kind of homogeneous algebra, looking at that as a general.
Could we take it afterwards, Sam? Yes. couldn't quite follow it. And even so, we have it. It's a good result. And but the questions, so we have now a condition like this one here, so one may wonder, when is that one satisfied? Suppose that A is a unit of C star algebra. Well, let us also take a natural number n that we keep fixed, such that all quotient of A have dimension greater than or equal to some number. Let me just call it n of n. It could even be infinity, but some number that will depend on n. Does it follow that there exists x in the constant group such that the condition above is satisfied? So in other words, this is also asking, I mean, can you just, I mean, more or less going back also to the question from Tom's paper, when can you really make these embeddings? Can you somehow tell of the algebra? Suppose even the algebra is simple and interdimensional. Can we then always solve this problem here? The answer is certainly not known, but it is okay if the real rank of A is zero, even with the possible, with the smallest possible number, namely this one here. This is the smallest possible number which this could be true. And this is a result by Francesca and myself. In the simple case, we don't know it. In the simple non-zero case, we don't know it. We certainly don't know it in the non-simple case. Let me illustrate. I think this could be an extremely hard question. Let me illustrate in the non-simple case one thing we also don't know. This is what is called the global Glim-Halving problem. I suppose here that A is a unital, and say it has no finite dimensional quotient. Does there exist X in the quintile group, and does there exist natural number n such that 2 times the class of X less than the class of the unit less than n times the class of X? Actually, this last thing here does say that X is true. But you see the similarity between this problem and this problem here. This certainly seems easier. And I mean, Eberhard, Jim and I have thought endlessly about this question. We've made clear progress and we somehow believe the problem is false. So many of these embedding problems probably are false, but we don't know. In the simple case, I have to say, this one is okay if A is simple, trivially. And it's also okay if the real rank of A is zero. Let me also, let me now state the main theorems, and then maybe I will ask the last questions afterwards. So these are by Benta and myself. Suppose D is a unital sheet algebra, then D is isomorphic to the Jiangsu algebra, if and only if 4 conditions hold. First one says that D is strongly self-absorbing. Second one says that the stable rank of D is 1. Third one says that for every natural number n, there exists x in the constant group, such that n times x less than class of 1, less than n plus 1 times x, and fourthly, D transfer B isomorphic to B for all U S F isomorphic B. So this is, in some sense, an intrinsic description of the Jansen algebra. It can be reformulated in many ways. We can take conditions 2 plus 3 and replace them by two other conditions, 2 prime, which says that D is stably finite, that is certainly bigger than requiring stable rank to be 1, and 3 prime saying that the constant group of D is almost imperforated. And then probably we should have the D is not a complex number somewhere. We can also replace 1 and 4 by the following, what am I saying here? No. 2, 3 and 4. They can be replaced with the following two conditions. A, the decomposition rank of Kirchberg and Winter of D is finite, and the next one is that D is KK equivalent to the complex numbers. So this condition here somehow also singles out the Jiangsu algebra as being the only strongly self-absorbing Cs algebra who is KK equivalent to the complex numbers, but with an extra assumption that it has finite decomposition rank. This last statement follows by the classification result of the Winter. Let me then just mention at the end here, maybe I just briefly indicate the proof. It just has a one line, basically, given what we already know. Maybe I put it up here. So as for the proof, if you look at the conditions 2 plus 3, so I'm going to prove the first theorem, not the new versions of it, but the first theorem, they imply that for every natural number n, one has that Zn, n plus 1, embeds into D. And then using that D is strongly self-absorbing, one gets that the Jiangsu algebra embeds into D. And this is thanks to a result from Thompson Winter. And this one, since both E and D are strongly self-absorbing, this implies that C tensor D is isomorphic to D. And one can use 1 and 4 to get that V, P, comma Q, tensor D is isomorphic to Z, P, comma Q, when P and Q are supernatural numbers that are relatively prime. But this is what I mentioned in the beginning of my talk. And this, of course, implies that Z, P, comma Q maps into D. Sorry, but D maps into this way around. D clearly maps into this, and hence map up into this. And as VPQ maps into the Jiangsu algebra, because this implies that D maps into the Jiangsu algebra, and then again using that they are strongly self-absorbing, we get that D tensor Z is isomorphic to this time Z. And combining these two results, we get C isomorphic to D. Okay, I'll stop here. Thank you. Yeah, that's a good question. I always forget that. We don't.
You don't have to, because, I mean, just to get the D mapped into ZPQ, you can just prove it for D and the Z.
Oh, yeah. I think that is
the only point where you
have K1 and K2. That one is K1 and K2.
The
C star version. I mean, it basically says that if you take a current over in Q, can you map that into a given C star algebra so that the image is full? And the reason why it's called global theorem having is that Grimm's theorem says that you can always map it into the C star algebra, provided the C star algebra is not abelian, but you cannot say anything about the size of the image. Yeah, it must be unisol. Yeah.
Is there a simple way of
writing
it as a
simple list? Which one?
The Z.
Yeah, well, we kind of did, didn't we?
Yeah, but
I mean, you don't actually see it
the
maps. Well, we can't get everything, can you? I mean, in a way you can sit down and construct it. I mean, you have a good point. Of course, I'd like to send this at for the highest bidder, and you already somehow put the price down a little bit. Is that a...
I'd like to understand.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so do I. So the story is, I mean, you can somehow write it down explicitly, but then it will not be so very nice anymore. It will basically be equivalent, I mean, to this thing here. So, I mean, we can say it under these restrictions, but I mean, it's a very fascinating question in a way, and I guess that there are more questions than answers, I'm afraid. And
Any more? Okay.